I don't know about you, but it feels like I've been in church. Almost to the point where you don't even need the message this morning. Almost. Not quite. Almost. All right. I know you're getting a little anxious there. Yeah. Hey, thank you guys so much for the feedback you gave me on last week's message as we started this series on guardrails. I really appreciate how you guys just helped me to understand, okay, this was really helpful, and just a good way to be looking at the Christian life. Not only, okay, why do we make certain decisions? You know, why do I not do certain things? Well, it's because, you know, I have some standards, I have some guardrails in my life that I just don't go there. And so thank you guys for helping me. And for those of you who may not have been here, I want to give you a little review of what we're talking about. You see guardrails on the roads as you drive down, and a guardrail, by definition, is a system that is designed to keep vehicles from straying into dangerous or off-limit areas. That makes sense to us. And, you know, we never complain, well, that's a dumb guard. Why'd they put that guardrail there? We never complain about those because, you know, they're, for the most part, they'll put them where we really need them, like on a bridge. We want a guardrail there. Or maybe around a tight curve, you definitely want a guardrail in place. Or sometimes it's right in the median of a road, you know, where cars are coming at different directions and very close proximity. You want to be keeping us from danger or some off-limit areas we definitely don't want to go into. We normally don't even notice them on the road, do we? Because we're just going down, because we're making progress. We're not thinking, oh, guardrail. No, we're going forward, and that guardrail is there just in case we need it. If something were to kind of go astray, man, that guardrail is going to keep us. Maybe it's going to be a small accident in comparison to what could have been had there been no guardrail whatsoever. So we appreciate why they're there. We're grateful they are there, but we know that those aren't the things. This isn't pinball out here on the roads, right? It's not supposed to be. They're there just to keep us from the danger that is beyond those areas. And they protect us from some things, but they also direct us. We don't go that way, we go this way. We're making progress going forward, going faster in the direction that God wants us to go. And the idea is, if we could look at guardrails, not just in our driving experience, but in our everyday life experience, what would that be like? If we had some guardrails in our relationships, or maybe some guardrails in our finances, or guardrails in our dating, or in our professional day-to-day decisions and the ethics that we have, how would that look, and how would that help us? A personal guardrail is this. A personal guardrail is a standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. Now, it's a personal guardrail. You might have something different as a standard of behavior than what I have. You know, for instance, if you are, if you are someone who travels a lot on business, maybe one standard of behavior is, okay, I do not travel alone with someone of the opposite sex who's not my wife. That would be a personal standard of behavior. Now, is there anything particularly sinful about just being in the same car with someone on a business trip? You know, with someone else, they're not your spouse. That is not sinful in and of itself, but for you, if you had that standard saying, unless that's my spouse, I don't go on a business trip with someone who is of the opposite sex. I don't do that. It's not because, well, that's a sinful thing. No, it's a guardrail. It's a standard of behavior. I don't do this because it's going to protect me from some things that may be beyond that situation. If those aren't in place, obviously, then the dangers all of a sudden, they come into play a lot more than what we would thought of earlier. Now, sometimes we ask ourselves the wrong question. We say, okay, is it a sin to, and then whatever. The question shouldn't be so much, well, is it a sin to do this? The question really ought to be is, what is my personal standard of behavior when it comes to this situation? Because when you're driving the truck and you see a guardrail, you don't say, well, I'm going to see just how close I can come to that baby over there. I mean, that's not what you're trying to do. You're not trying to say, how close is too close to that guardrail? I mean, is it 3 feet away? Do the mirrors scrape the bolts on the guardrail? Is that too close? I mean, we don't try to see how close we get to the guardrail. The idea is those guardrails are there. They're going to protect us from the dangers that are just beyond. And as we think about that in our own personal lives, we have to really agree on one thing, that so often our greatest regrets in life could have been avoided if I would have had some guardrails in place long before I ever got to that problem. Because somewhere beyond that guardrail, there are problems, there are regrets, there are sorrows that we just don't need. Do you have enough problems in your life already? Okay, yeah, so we don't need to open the gateway for more problems, right? And so there's nothing wrong with having some personal standards of behavior. I don't go there because I don't need what's on the other side of those things. Well, today we're going to talk about something that is something every one of us we can relate to. We're going to talk about friendships. Maybe you kind of picked up that theme in the songs that we have sung so far this morning. It's all about, you know, the friendships. I'm a friend of God. Jesus, friend of sinners. So those are the songs really talking about the friendship that we can have with God. And thank God for friendships. Would you do something for me right now? On your note-taking guide somewhere, I'm not going to collect these, but would you write down just a list of names of your close friends? These are not necessarily the people that you would say, well, you know, they accepted my friend request. Did I request that? Okay. Yeah, suddenly they're there. Oh, well, sure, Botswana. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know a lot of people over there. But no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that you know. It doesn't matter what the situation, it doesn't matter what time of day or night, but you know that if you need them, guess what? They would be there for you. You're writing down some names that you know, you call them. There's no question. You know they're going to show up. I want you to keep hold of that because we're going to refer back to that list there. Maybe you're not all done. Some of you aren't writing, which I don't quite understand, but that's okay. What a great blessing friendships are. You know, they are so important that sociologists said this, that we become the average of the five closest friends that we have in our life. And somebody said this, and I happen to believe this, they said, show me your friends and I will show you your future. If you're wondering, what does the future hold for me in relationships, look at your friends. If you're wondering, what does the future hold for me financially, look at the friends that you have around you. What about, you know, professionally or morally? Or what's my spiritual life going to be like in the future? Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. You can predict with almost certainty what is going to be coming down and what that's going to look like a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, based upon the friends that you have around you. Show me your friends, I will show you your future. You know, you don't have to be a scientist or sociologist to figure that out, though, do you? There was somebody who knew that long before they ever started studying about friendships, right? You know who that person was? It was your mom, right? Your mom, she knew long before because she said, I don't want you going up to so-and-so's house, right? Yeah, you're not going in there. Why did she think that? Did she just have some kind of like a hex or put on that house or something? No, it wasn't that. She understood intuitively that friendships are muy importante. You know, mucho important, okay? We're talking big time important. She understood that. That if there were people that she didn't approve of, she didn't want them around in your life. Now, I know a family who was so worried about this very thing with their son that the dad came home from work one day, and here's what he did. He said, we are selling the house. We are moving. They had a nice house. It was a nice, nice community, but their son was running with some kids that he didn't want to run with, and they tried to talk to their son, and nothing was stopping, and so the dad came home. We are selling. We are moving. They moved out of that school district. They moved off into the country somewhere, and guess what? They took the son with them, but the friend stayed behind, and that son, he was so, so upset with his parents for doing that, and I can remember I talked to the son afterward. His name was Woody. And I talked to him. He said, I was so mad at my parents for doing that. He said, but looking back, that was the best decision that anybody ever made in my life. And here's what happened. He got out of that. He got out of that circle of friends that was leading him the wrong direction. He got in with a good circle of friends that were building him up. Guess what? About a year after they moved to their new house, he came to Jesus Christ. And it wasn't long after that that he was called into the mission field, and he served out in South America for like 20 years, serving the Lord with gladness. I tell you what, do you think that was a pretty important decision his mom and dad made back then? Absolutely, because his dad knew, show me your friends, I'm going to show you your future, and I don't like what I see, so we're getting out of here. It cost his dad big time. They lost money on that deal, but guess what? He gained a son. Yeah, I'll take that deal any day of the week. Wow, show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Friendships, they will make you or they will break you. And the thing about friendships is, while they are wonderful, guess what? They're also very dangerous. Because, you know, when we're with our friends, we kind of put our guard down, don't we? Oh, well, we're with friends. All right, just relax a little bit. It's okay. You know, with friends, guess what? You know what? I want to be accepted by my friends. And so, you know, I'm willing to, yeah, well, why not, you know? If you think about it for a minute, did you have your first cigarette when you were all alone or were you with a friend? See, a lot of addictive behavior begins in a crowd, not all alone. Most likely, your greatest regrets in life happened when you're hanging out with friends, right? It's for me. And I think for a lot of us, we'd have to say, yeah, probably the biggest regrets I have happened when I was around people that, frankly, I knew I shouldn't have been around. Well, this is a pivotal topic, and we need some real wisdom on this. I can't think of anybody better to go to than King Solomon. He's known as the wisest man who ever lived. Wrote the book, most of the book of Proverbs, wrote Song of Solomon, wrote the book of Ecclesiastes. And he gives us such incredible wisdom on this. And the one in particular one we're going to look at is Proverbs chapter 13, verse 20. I have it up here, and I would like you to read it with me as we're just going to kind of break this down, because he gives it to us in such succinct form, but there's just a lot of wisdom packed into this. Please read this with me. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. Now, walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. This is a two-for-one proverb. It's kind of neat because there's a promise and a warning all tucked in right at the same time. And the promise is pretty obvious anyway. You become wise by walking with the wise. That makes sense. We get that, don't we? I mean, if you had a friend who were really into healthy living and fitness and everything, you're hanging around them for a while, guess what's going to start to happen? You're like, huh. That makes some sense. And so maybe you change your diet, or maybe you change the way you're exercising, and suddenly, guess what? You're becoming healthier. You're becoming more fit than what you were before you started hanging out with them. Same is true with finances, isn't it? If you got a friend who's really good with finance, you start talking to them about things, I'm like, huh, that makes some sense. And so maybe I should start doing some of that. Guess what happens? You start becoming better with your finances. If you got friends that they have a great relationship with your kids, and you're like, wow, that is really neat. Do you think I could? Yeah. Well, and so you start emulating some of the things that your wise friends have going on, and you start putting that in your own life, and it, surprise of all surprises, you look like you're pretty wise. Wisdom has this effect of rubbing off on us. It's a beautiful thing. You don't even have to be wise when you start this out, but you could just pick things up along the way. It's incredible what you can do if you have wise friends. If your friend has a great marriage, guess what? You know, you can start saying, you know what? We should probably start doing some of those things too. And now all of a sudden you put those things into practice. Like, wow, this is making a whole lot of sense. There's a warning that is given to us as well. But it's not what you think. We would think, well, walk with the wise, become wise, but walk with the fools, you become a fool. That's not what he says. See, Solomon, wisest man who ever lived, he takes us to this whole another level of wisdom here. Here's what he says to us. He says, a companion of fools suffers harm. Well, that's a little different. Well, if you walk with a fool, you're going to become a fool. Well, yeah, we could probably say that. But he says a companion of fools suffers harm. Here's the thing he's trying to say. You spend your life hanging around fools. You may never engage in their behavior, but guess what? The shrapnel of their life is going to affect you. See, you may never say, well, I'm not doing the things that they're doing. I'm not saying what they're saying. I don't think the way, I don't even believe the way. It's just fun, just being around them and everything. The shrapnel of their life will eventually affect you. It's going to happen. I had this conversation just earlier this week. I was talking to a friend that we're saying, well, this is what I'm going to be preaching on Sunday, and this is kind of what I'm thinking. And he's like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, let's just say that you have a friend who had too much to drink, and he gets behind the wheel of a car, and you're in the car with them, and he causes an accident. And you can say, well, I wasn't drinking. Guess what? You're still affected by their foolish decision. A companion of fools suffers harm. That's what he's trying to say. He can say, well, I didn't drink anything. I didn't say that. I wasn't thinking those things. I didn't do all of those things. You know what? He's just a friend. Man, this is the lie that we tell ourselves, isn't it? Well, as long as I don't do what they do, then I'm okay. You guys have had friends long enough. You've had people in your life long enough. You have felt the effects of somebody else's foolish decisions, haven't you? Maybe you have paid emotionally for the decisions a friend has made. Maybe for you, you had to pay financially because of choices that somebody else made. I didn't do that, but guess what? I am paying emotionally, I'm paying financially, I am paying spiritually because of the choices that you've made. I am paying over relationally, maybe even professionally because of the choices that you've made. A companion of fools suffers harm. We should probably define just what a fool is. That would probably be a helpful thing. You think, well, a fool is somebody who doesn't know any better. That's not a fool. That's something else. A fool is this. There's somebody who knows better, but they just don't care. You say, well, don't you see what this is doing to your body? Don't you see what this is doing to your family? How this is affecting your marriage? Don't you see how that? And they say, yeah. Don't you care? No. That's what a fool is. They know better. They just don't care. And so when we kind of think about this whole thing, we have to understand, friends who are not careful with their lives, they are not going to be careful with our lives. If you have friends who don't take care of themselves, don't expect them to take care of you. If you have friends that aren't caring for their marriage, they're not going to care about your marriage either. If you have friends that they don't care what happens to their finances, guess what? They're not going to care what happens to your finances either. Just give them a chance. If you have friends who don't mind abusing their bodies, they'll actually feel better about themselves if you do it too. If you have friends that are cheating in their relationships or on their taxes or some other way, guess what? They will feel better about themselves if you just start doing that too. If you have friends who break the law, they will not confront you about breaking the law. Friendship is a dangerous thing. We need to be very careful. See, and danger requires guardrails, right? That's why we got to have some standards in place, a personal standard that, okay, if I have a friend who is doing these certain things, there are some guardrails in place. I'm not going there. You're saying, well, won't that affect my friendship? Yes. It might just be the thing that saves your friend. Now, when you start veering off the road, though, you know, there ought to be something that happens in your conscience. I think they've done that now with new cars these days. Don't they have kind of, what do they call that when your car is kind of veering out of the lane? What does they call that thing? Some sort of lane veering out of warning bell. I think that's the official term. I don't know, but you know, when you start to get out of your lane, all of a sudden it's just a little warning bell saying, there's danger here, you better pay attention. And you know what? That ought to be happening in our own conscience, right? There ought to be something inside of us that's just kind of warning us, saying, and we're getting close to the guardrail, saying, you don't need to go here. You need to pay attention. Because if you don't, there's going to be some really big problems that are coming up on the horizon very soon. And so if we kind of think of that, what would happen in us if our, if we have some guardrails in our lives, that in our relationships, in our money, in our marriage, and in our spiritual life, what would make our conscience start to light up, or maybe a red flag would start waving, or there's some sort of internal alarm that would be going off? Here's some situations that ought to trigger those alarms. Your conscience should start lighting up when your friends are living differently than you want your life to go. When people are heading down a road, guess what? Where they're heading is a good indication of where they're going to lead you. That doesn't make sense, doesn't it? Where they're heading is a good indication of where they're going to lead you. You follow them, that's where you're going to go. And so when you see people who are living differently, you'll say, it ought to just take, wait a minute, I got to think about this. Because I see where you're going, and I know that's not where I need to go. It's time for a guardrail to be put up here. Your conscience should be lighting up when you're pretending to be someone that you're not. Just think about this for a moment. After you've been around that person for a while, are they starting to act more like you? Or are you starting to act more like them? Who's influencing whom here? And if they're having a bigger influence on you in directions you don't want to go, guess what? It's time for a guardrail to be put up there. I have to have a personal standard of behavior in this situation because I don't like where that's going. Another situation that should be setting off some warning bells for us is this. You feel the pressure to compromise. See, true friends will value what is valuable to you. But fools, they don't care what you value. Fools cause us to give up the very things that we hold dear. Another situation is we keep telling ourselves, well, I'll go, but I won't participate. How many people right now that that they have been caught, they were in the wrong time, they were at the wrong place, and are the wrong people, and guess what? They're paying for it. Even if you say, I was not part of it. I wasn't participating in that. I was just watching. Yeah. If we go back to our drunk driving situation, the pastor of the vehicle would say, I wasn't drinking, I wasn't driving, but guess what? I'm still paralyzed today. Here's the thing. When we get burned because of somebody else's foolish choices, it doesn't matter if we were participating or not. And you know as well as I do that somewhere before that happened, before we got to that sorrow, that regret, that problem, somewhere inside of us, there was something saying, you need to stop now and go a different direction. Number five, our conscience ought to be lighting up when we hope the people we respect don't find out. Thinking, well, as long as my parents don't find out, it'll be all right. As long as maybe my other circle of friends, they don't learn about it, it's going to be okay. I can kind of manage this over here. Guess what? Maybe your spouse never finds out about the other cell phone and the texting that's going on over there. But if that's what this fool is leading you into, it's time to turn and run for your life the other direction. Man, your car is scraping on the guardrail, threatening to push right through it into problems you don't need. It's time to say, this time to go another direction here. It's time for some strong guardrails. If those are the things that are happening, we need some powerful personal standards of behavior. Saying, okay, I can't go that way. because these things are starting to happen. Okay, I need something that's going to keep me from going even further because I don't like the way that, the direction that this is going right now. Now, it'd be so wrong for us to end this message without really addressing, okay, how can I be a true friend? And if I'm going to be a true friend to people, there's a couple of things that I think are really, really important. Number one is this: true friends need to be present. Be present. Listen to what Proverbs 17 says. This is the FBV. A friend is someone you may or may not know well who accepts your friend request on Facebook. This person is born to like and comment on your post and make you feel better about yourself. That's what it says right there out of Proverbs. Now, that's actually the Facebook version of the Bible. That's not real, okay? That's not actually there, all right? You're probably saying, wow, I don't know where you got that. So, no, it's not where that's the Facebook version, okay? That's not what it says, all right? The real version of the real Bible says this. Proverbs 17:17 says this: a friend, what? Loves at all times. And a brother is born for a time of adversity. I can remember when I was going through some really tough personal stuff. Several people knew about it, and a number of people came up to me and they said, hey, I just want to let you know I'm praying for you. Man, that is so good. Tell you what, I don't get anywhere without the prayers of my friends. People who are lifting me up, praying for me, and I know that they are. And that's huge. When I was going through a bunch of stuff, I had one guy, made it his business, and he came to me once a week, and he sat me down, and he talked through this whole thing with me. I got to be honest, at the beginning of our talks, I was putting up a good front. Oh, I got this. He would not let me off the hook. He knew I didn't got this. You ain't got nothing. You got big problems that you got. And he talked me through this thing, and there was times that we would cry together. And at the end of our time, he would just lay his hands on me, and he would pray for me. Tell you what, your presence says so much more than your words. He's like, well, I don't quite know what I'm supposed to say. Show up. That's the first thing. Go back on that list that you made earlier. Who are the people that you know that you could call? Doesn't matter, 3:00 in the morning, you can call them and they're going to say, don't go anywhere, I'll be right there. That's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of friends I'm talking about. We need those kinds of friends. The sad thing is, the American Sociological Review reported this: the average American has only 2 close friends. I suspect if you look at your list, the one you wrote, or even just kind of maybe you're making a mental list of your true friends, I suspect most of us probably didn't have more than 2 names. If that's not sad enough, think about this. In that same report, they said 25 years ago, the average American had 6 close friends. In 25 years, we've lost 2/3 of our close friends. And you wonder why we're having the problems we're having. Could it really be going back to something as basic as having true friends around us? People who are pulling us up, not pulling us down. For us to be a true friend, we need to be present. We need to be that friend, not just to have those friends, but to be that friend. Secondly, a true friend needs to be open. We need to be honest with each other, not just to tell about our strengths, but also to share our weaknesses. Here in James chapter 5, he tells us this: confess your sins to who? Each other. Oh, wait a minute. I thought we just prayed to God. James says, confess your sins to each other. And pray for who are we praying for? We're praying for each other so that you may be healed. I wonder when the last time it was that you got together and you just said, this is the sin I've been struggling with. This is my failure. This is how I've blown it. Well, I'm good at bragging about how good I did in the 5K. I'm good at saying, man, I can do all these push-ups. I'm good at saying, man, I memorized this many verses of the Bible, and blah, blah, blah. But hey, we're supposed to confess our sins to each other. You need a friend to come alongside of you and lay their hands on you and say, I just want to pray for you right now. Do you have a friend like that? Are you a friend like that? That's what a real friend does. That's how a real friend acts. And I know what you're thinking. Man, Pastor Bob, I got all the blanks filled in. And do you see the time, Pastor? I get it. I get it. Can I ask you just to do one thing for me? Can I ask for your attention for about 2 more minutes? And these might be the most pivotal 2 minutes you ever give to God. See, I know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. As soon as we walk out the door, we're on to the next thing, aren't we? I already got my afternoon figured out. I know what I'm doing. And as soon as I leave here, I'm going on to that. But I wonder if, as we've been talking about this issue, there's been a face that's been popping up in your mind, or maybe a relationship you have with somebody, and you're saying, you know what? Unless I get some guardrails put up here, I'm going to suffer for this. I'm not going to be in a position that I can actually help my friend out of the problems that they have. I need some guardrails. Maybe there's a situation that's come up and God's just been bumping into that here this morning and speaking to you about. I don't know what it is, but here's what I do know. Your heavenly Father is speaking to you right now. I also know this. Unless you do something about it now, 1 year from now, you're going to be regretting, saying, man, I wish we could go back to that day there in January. I wish I could go back and I could make some changes there, and I wouldn't be in this position that I am in right now. Can I ask you to do something? Can we treat this holy moment as if this is your second chance? And make those changes right now. Present that to God and say, God, I don't know what's going to happen out of this, but it's time for me to honor you in this situation, in this relationship. It can't go further. Help me to set up some clear guardrails right here. We need to be intentional about walking with the wise, because the companions of fools, they're going to suffer. Do you need that?